Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take the materials you send us, dig in, and pull out the core insights you need. Fast, informative, hopefully a bit entertaining.
Yeah, think of it as your shortcut to getting up to speed on some pretty complex stuff with all the key takeaways and maybe a few surprises along the way.
Definitely. And today, we are really diving deep. We're looking at a mathematically heavy text, Stochastic Partial Differential Equations. An introduction.
That's right. Our listener, who we're calling the learner, shared some key chapters and appendices. These parts really lay the foundation for SPDEs, which is, well, it's a fascinating but definitely challenging area.
Oh yeah, foundational is the word. This text, it kind of lives where several big fields meet.
Exactly. You've got probability theory, partial differential equations, PDEs, and functional analysis all playing together. It's quite the intersection.
A rich mix. So maybe give us a quick overview. What are the core building blocks we're going to explore from these sections?
Okay, so we'll be looking at the basics.
Yeah.
Things like Gaussian measures, but in infinite dimensions. Then Wiener processes, again, generalized for these big spaces.
Like Brownian motion, but bigger.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Then the stochastic integral, how you actually integrate with respect to these processes. And finally, the different ways we even define what a solution means for these equations. It's not always straightforward.
Right. Okay, so for the learner, and really anyone listening who's curious about this advanced math, our goal here is to light up those essential concepts, the stuff you need to grasp to even start navigating this book, this theory.
Yeah, we want to provide some clarity, help you see the connections without getting totally lost in the, you know, the super technical weeds.
Exactly. Those aha moments. So it's a massive topic. Where's the best place to start building this picture?
Well, the book itself starts with the why. Chapter one tackles the motivation. Why even study stochastic differential equations in infinite dimensions? Why add that complexity?
Good question. What is the main driver for mathematicians heading into SPDE territory?
A big part of it connects to things like Fokker-Planck equations via something called the Kolmogorov operator. The book actually points to another text for more on that specific link.
Okay.
But maybe the more surprising motivation is this idea of regularization by noise.
Regularization by noise. That sounds backwards. Noise usually messes things up, right?
It does sound counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But the idea is that adding a bit of well-chosen randomness can actually smooth things out, mathematically speaking. It can prevent solutions from becoming too spiky or badly behaved.
Huh. So the randomness kind of fills in the gaps or stops things getting stuck?
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah.
The less restricted the noise, the better behaved the associated operator becomes. It's like the noise provides a kind of a subtle smoothing effect. It's really quite fascinating.
Okay, that's definitely interesting. So the book grounds this abstract idea pretty quickly with examples, I gather.
Right away. It lays out four key types of SPDEs early on. First up are stochastic linear evolution equations.
Linear, okay. Starting simple-ish?
Relatively simple, yes. They're defined on a space, dollar, involve a mass parameter dollar, and this thing called a cylindrical Wiener process, 20t dollar on a related potentially larger space. And there's a technical piece here, a Hilbert-Schmidt embedding, which basically ensures the mapping between these spaces works nicely.
Hilbert-Schmidt. Okay, that sounds like functional analysis kicking in.
It is. It controls how things move between these different infinite dimensional spaces.
Got it. So that's the linear case. What's next? Non-linearity, I assume.
Yep. Example two, stochastic reaction diffusion equations. These are on 1202, so functions over some domain in Mapp-Geller-Recep.
Like modeling chemical reactions or population spread, but with randomness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They involve another operator dollar, a function day dollar, that has what's called local weak monotonicity, which is a bit more flexible than strict monotonicity and limited growth, plus the cylindrical Wiener process again.
Okay, so that local weak monotonicity lets you model more complex interactions, maybe.
Precisely. Allows for a broader range of phenomena. Then number three is the stochastic generalized Berger's equation.
Berger's equation. That rings a bell. Fluids. Shockwaves.
That's the one. The deterministic version is a classic simple model for fluid flow, showing shock formation. Here it's on $200, $100, has differential operators, specific conditions on the functions involved, like Lipschitz continuity and cubic growth, and again, the operator dollars and the Wiener process dollar.
So adding randomness to see how it affects things like shockwaves, perhaps?
Could be, yeah. Or modeling turbulence in a simplified setting. And the final example in this initial batch.
The big one.
Kind of, yeah. The 2D stochastic Navier-Stokes equation. This is for fluid dynamics, defined on a special Hilbert space dollars of divergence-free vector fields.
Divergence free, right? For incompressible fluids.
Exactly. It has a projection operator, pH dollar, viscosity no, that tricky bilinear term for fluid interactions, and of course the stochastic forcing term with Ballard's and Euler.
And this is 2D specifically.
Yes. The 2D case is mathematically much better behaved than 3D, especially when you add noise. It's a core model for studying turbulence with random influences.
Wow. Okay. So even these initial examples are already pulling in serious concepts from PDEs and physics. To actually handle them mathematically, you need the right tools. You mentioned infinite dimensional Wiener processes.
Absolutely. That's chapter two. Since these equations often live in function spaces, which are infinite dimensional, we need to generalize the familiar Brownian motion, the Wiener process, to these settings.
So how do you do that?
It starts with defining a Gaussian measure on a Banach space, $2. Think of it like a normal distribution, but for infinite dimensions. It's defined by its mean dollars, which is just a point in $1, and a covariance operator dollar.
An operator as covariance instead of just a matrix.
Exactly. To call is a linear operator on Teller dollar.
Yeah.
And it has to satisfy some conditions. Mm-hmm. Non-negative, symmetric, and crucially, it must be trace class.
Trace class. Okay, that sounds important. What does that mean practically?
Trace class means, roughly, that if you sum up its eigenvalues, you get a finite number. Appendix B goes into the details. This finiteness is key to making sure the Gaussian measure behaves properly in infinite dimensions, stops it from being spread out infinitely in a way.
Okay, so it keeps things contained mathematically.
Yeah, pretty much. The text also mentions how you get the mean dollar and this operator Q dollar from the Fourier transform of the measure, and highlights that Q dollar has this nice structure, positive eigenvalues lambda dollar that sum up to something finite, and corresponding eigenvectors k.
Like principal components in statistics, but for operators.
That's a decent analogy, yeah. And proposition 2.1.6 shows you can actually represent a random variable $6 drawn from this Gaussian measure using these eigenvectors $2 and a bunch of independent standard normal random variables. It's a really useful representation.
So you can build these complex infinite dimensional random things from simpler standard ones.
Essentially, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And corollary 2.1.7 basically says if you give me a suitable operator, Q non-negative symmetric trace class, and a mean dollar, I can guarantee that a Gaussian measure Q exists on your space.
Right. So the building blocks are sound. Now, how do we get movement, the process over time, the Wiener process part?
That brings us to the Kuh-Wiener process.
Yeah.
The K idea is the increments. Dubiénaise is itself a Gaussian random variable in $1.
Okay.
Specifically, it has mean zero and covariance PSQ. So the variance, or spread, grows linearly with time, just like standard Brownian motion. And crucially, increments over non-overlapping time intervals are independent.
The classic Wiener process properties, but now with this operator baked in.
Exactly. And the text shows how to construct it using that Karhunenlov expansion, using the eigenvalues lambda and eigenvectors the Acoples-Uclerus, combined with independent standard 1D Brownian motions Betacher.
Ah, so again, building the complex from the simple.
Yes. And importantly, proposition 2.1.10 confirms this process is continuous in time, which we definitely need. Then there's the idea of the filtration.
A history of the process.
Right. $2 is all the information available up to time. And proposition 2.1 just concerns that Deller-Dieterke is still a Kugler-Wiener process, even when you consider only the information it generates itself. It behaves consistently.
Okay, so we have random paths evolving continuously in these infinite dimensional spaces. The next big step must be integration, right? How do you integrate with respect to Deller-Dieterke?
Precisely. That's also in chapter two. Building the stochastic integral. It starts, as usual, with simple processes. Think of functions that are constant on small time intervals and only depend on the past.
Predictable step functions, basically.
Exactly. For these simple guys, we have the Atodo isometry. This is huge. It relates the expected squared size, the norm of the integral contention dera, to the expected integral of the squared size of the integrand theorem.
That sounds familiar from finite dimensions. It's what lets you extend the integral, right?
Absolutely. The isometry is the key. It allows you to extend the definition of the integral from simple processes to a much larger class of predictable processes filed.
Yes.
Specifically those in a space denoted Mathcalin-2-Violet-2-T-L2U.
Whoa, okay. Tull-2-U-dollars. What's that space?
It's the space of Hilbert-Schmidt operators
from
U-dollars to dollars. And U-dollars is like a scaled version of our original space. Mm-hmm. So I was using the square root of the covariance operator, Q12.
Okay, so the covariance Q is really embedded deep in the definition of the integral itself.
It is. It defines the geometry you're integrating against. The text also mentions Dube's maximal inequality, which gives bounds on the integral's maximum value and outlines the construction using the space U dollars and its inner product.
And cylindrical Wiener processes, you mentioned those earlier. Are integrals defined for them too?
Yes, section 2.5 covers that. A cylindrical Wiener process is slightly different, often used when you don't have a trace class covariance on the main space itself. It's constructed using an orthonormal basis and standard Brownian motions, possibly linked via a Hilbert-Schmidt embedding into another space, U$1. You can define stochastic integrals against these two.
Okay, this is a serious toolbox we're assembling. Now, Chapter 3 takes a detour back to Math BEs to finite dimensions. Why do that now?
Good question. It serves as a bridge. It revisits standard stochastic differential equations, SDEs, in a familiar setting, the kind you might see in mathematical finance or physics.
Exactly. Theorem 3.1.1 gives the standard existence and uniqueness result for strong solutions. Provided the coefficients, the dollar and sigma, are nice enough, typically Lipschitz, continuous with linear growth.
The standard conditions. Right. And it mentions an important a priori estimate, a bound on the solution, and a technical tool called the localization lemma used in the proof. Basically, it reinforces the core ideas and techniques in a setting we understand better before plunging back into infinite dimensions.
Makes sense. Build intuition first. So Chapter 4 gets back to the main event. SDEs in infinite dimensions applying directly to SPDEs. This must be where it all comes together.
This is where it really starts to click, yes. The key structure introduced here is the Gelfand triple. Subsitec H, subsitec V dollar.
Ah, the Gelfand triple, a classic setup in PDE analysis.
Exactly. You have a nice Banach space, like a Sobolev space, sitting densely inside a Hilbert space, often 2-tall-2, which itself sits inside the dual space dollar-dollars.
Yeah.
This lets you handle solutions that might be quite rough, not smooth enough for dollar, but okay in vial.
A hierarchy of regularity.
Precisely. The chapter then lays out the core conditions, labeled H1 to H4, on the operator's dollar, the drift term, and the dollar, the fusion term, that guarantee the STDE DXT DXT DT plus BTX DTWT is well posed. These conditions involve things like coercivity, monotonicity, and growth bounds on I in dollars.
Okay, so these H conditions are the key to making sense of the equation. What kind of SPDEs fit under this umbrella?
The text gives several important examples again. Linear equations, gradient systems where II is the gradient of some potential.
Yeah.
Then more complex ones like the stochastic Delboule cost equation.
Nonlinear diffusion.
Right, where Vire would be something like $2 and Munters. And also the stochastic porous medium equation, where II involves the Laplacian of a nonlinear function of the solution, modeling flow in porous materials.
These are definitely non-trivial PDEs, even without the noise.
Absolutely. The framework is powerful enough to cover these. And the main result, Theorem 4.2.4, says that if those conditions, H1, H4, hold, you get a unique solution. This solution is vital weak, meaning it satisfies the equation in a generalized sense. But it's also continuous in time when viewed as taking values in the Hilbert space dollars.
So weak in space, but continuous in time in the central space dollars.
Kind of, yeah. The chapter also nods to the Itô formula in this setting, super important for calculations, and mentions the Markov property.
Does the solution behave like a Markov process?
Under suitable conditions, yes. Proposition 4.3.7 defines it using transition probabilities. Future depends only on the present. And theorem 4.3.9 gives conditions for the existence of a unique invariant measure.
Like a long-term statistical equilibrium for the system.
Exactly. Describes the statistical steady state, if one exists.
Okay. Now, Chapter 5 seems to relax some of those conditions from Chapter 4, talking about locally monotone coefficients. Why the need for more generality?
Because those global monotonicity and coercivity conditions in H1, H4 can be too strict for some important applications. Chapter 5 introduces weaker assumptions, like local monotonicity H2 and relaxed growth conditions.
So the operators don't have to behave uniformly nicely everywhere, just locally?
That's the idea. It opens the door to analyzing SPDEs where the nonlinearities are maybe stronger or less well-behaved globally. Theorem 5.1.3 gives existence and uniqueness under these weaker conditions.
And what's a key example that benefits from this weaker framework?
The stochastic 2D Navier-Stokes equation mentioned earlier actually fits nicely here. Example 5.1.6. Its nonlinear term isn't globally monotone in the required way, but it satisfies the local conditions.
Ah, interesting. So this generalization is necessary even for that core fluid dynamics model.
It is. The chapter also delves into related deterministic equations, using tools like Bahari's inequality and pseudo-monotone operators. It even briefly discusses the deterministic 3D Navier-Stokes problem.
The million-dollar question.
Well, it mentions the known local existence result for the deterministic 3D case, and then introduces a modified version called the tamed 3D Navier-Stokes equation.
Tamed.
Yeah, they modify the nonlinearity slightly at high energies, and that version becomes globally well-posed, even in 3D. It's a way to get around the difficulties of the original equation while keeping some of its structure.
Fascinating. A mathematical workaround. Okay, finally, Chapter 6 introduces mild solutions.
Mm-hmm.
How are these different from the weak solutions we just discussed?
Mild solutions offer a different approach, especially useful for equations driven by linear operators that generate semigroups, like the heat equation or wave equation parts. Instead of working directly with the differential form, you reformulate the SBDE as an integral equation using the operator semigroup, semigroover.
So you use the solution formula for the linear part.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Sneer is written as 0 acting on the initial condition, plus integral terms involving the nonlinearity velars and the Noesia dollars also acted upon by the semigroup. Hypothesis M.0 lays out the conditions needed on some semi and tie velars.
And this approach also gives existence and uniqueness.
Under the right conditions, yes. Theorem 6.2.3 provides existence and uniqueness for a mild solution in a specific function space. This approach often highlights smoothing properties of the semigroup and is good for studying pathwise continuity involving something called the stochastic convolution term.
So another way to define and find solutions, perhaps better suited for certain types of SPDEs, especially semilinear ones.
Exactly. It leverages the power of semigroup theory.
Okay, and before we wrap up the main body, the appendices, you mentioned they're crucial. Can you give us the highlights? What's in there?
They are definitely not optional extras. Appendix A covers the Bogner integral. That's how you integrate functions, taking values in Banach spaces.
Yeah.
Essential for infinite dimensions.
Right.
Appendix B is about nuclear and Hilbert-Schmidt operators. We saw Hilbert-Schmidt operators in the stochastic integral definition, and nuclear operators relate to the trace class condition for covariance operators, $2.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. Appendix C discusses the pseudo-inverse of operators, useful when things aren't nicely invertible. Appendix D recaps key tools from martingale theory, the probabilistic engine driving a lot of this.
Martingales, essential for stochastic calculus.
Absolutely. Appendix E discusses the relationship between different types of solutions, weak and strong, and the Yamada-Watanabe theorem, which connects uniqueness of weak solutions to existence of strong ones.
Ah, so clarifying those different solution concepts.
Yes. Appendix F has some technical results about continuous dependence. Appendix G gives a nice summary comparing strong, mild, and weak solutions for SPDEs. And finally, Appendix I introduces Gersonoff's theorem in infinite dimensions.
Gersonoff, changing the probability measure.
Exactly. A super powerful technique for analyzing how solutions behave under different assumptions or for relating different models. It's a cornerstone of advanced stochastic analysis.
Wow. Okay, those appendices really do sound like required reading to make sense of the main chapters. We have covered a lot of ground. If you had to boil it down, what's the single most important takeaway for the learner trying to get into this book?
I think the main thing is realizing that SPDEs aren't just a small extension of ODEs or PDEs. It's a true synthesis. You absolutely need solid footing in probability, especially infinite dimensional probability, Wiener processes, martingales.
Right.
You need functional analysis, Hilbert and Banach spaces, operators, dual spaces, embeddings. That's the language everything is written in.
The Gelfand triple, Sobolev spaces.
All of that. And then you need the specific machinery of stochastic integration in these infinite dimensional spaces. The Itô isometry, handling operator-valued integrands. These pieces are deeply interconnected.
You can't really skip any of them.
Not if you want to understand what's going on, no. You see how the abstract probability feeds into the integration, which is then used in the functional analysis framework to define and solve the equations, connected back to examples like Navier-Stokes.
It really paints a picture of how these concepts build on each other. This overview, this map we've sketched out, should hopefully give the learner a good starting point, a way to see the structure.
That's the hope. It's a challenging field, no doubt, but incredibly rich. Seeing the path through these initial chapters is the first step.
So based on this, what are some natural next steps or deeper questions someone might pursue?
Well, you could dive into specific applications, really understand how SPDEs model turbulence or financial markets, for instance.
See the motivation in action.
Exactly. Or you could pick one of the key theorems, say the existence theorem for weak solutions under conditions, H1, H4, and really work through the proof. That builds deep understanding.
Get your hands dirty with the details.
Definitely. Another route is to explore the differences between the solution types, strong, weak, mild, more deeply. When is one more appropriate than another? What are the precise relationships? Or maybe dig into Gersonoff's theorem more. It's such a powerful tool.
Lots of avenues. And for everyone listening, as you maybe explore this further, here's something to chew on. How does simply adding randomness fundamentally change how we think about and analyze partial differential equations?
That's really the core question, isn't it? It introduces entirely new phenomena and requires this whole new set of mathematical tools we've been discussing.
It's a deep question, maybe one for future explorations. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure.